Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. Want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Jalen Redd in motion with the right, three receivers over there now. And Herbert with the ball back to throw. Pressure comes, throw it back, and sir, touchdown!
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Into a shotgun with Carson beside it. Carson gets the handoff inside, and he's in easily. Touchdown, Seahawks for Chris Carson. It took one extra play, but a nice big hole right behind his center, Justin Britt, and the Seahawks go back on top, 31-28.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Carlos Correa steps in. Jay Happ's the pitcher, and the first pitch hits a deep right field. Judge back, it's gone! Carlos Correa walks it off, and the Astros take game two to even up the series and a win apiece.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080, The Fan.
All right, 12:02 in the Rose City. Time for Dirt and Sprague on Portland Sports Leader, 1080, The Fan. Brandon Sprague, Andy Dirt Johnson on this Monday afternoon, halfway through October already.
What the hell happened, man?
It just flies right by.
We got the Blazer season opener coming next week. I don't know if I'm quite mentally prepared for that, to be honest with you. When you got all the core four going at the same time, I don't know if I'm ready for that.
Yeah, a week from tomorrow, the Blazers tip off their season against the Nugs.
What the hell, man? Here we go. Mm-hmm. We're a couple of weeks away from Halloween, flying on by.
Yeah, the worst part to tell you is once Halloween's done, I'm about a month out from being gone for 20 days.
Yeah, you're gone the whole month of December. I don't know what the hell I'm going to do for like three straight weeks.
A lot of co-host fill-ins, maybe.
Maybe, we'll see.
Maybe just a lot of you and swag. I don't know.
I'd love to go find some people, but I'm usually too lazy to do that, and I'll probably put it off and forget, and then next thing I know, you'll be like, hey, by the way, it's my last show. I'm gone for a month. I'm like, oh, God, that's right. I got to do solo shows for a month straight.
It's my first real international trip. Like, I went to Mexico in eighth grade, but that's a four-hour flight.
You're going to the motherland. Well, not really, but your wife's motherland. Fatherland.
My wife's mother's motherland.
There you go.
Technically,
close
my
enough.
Wife's motherland,
yeah, sure.
Too.
Yeah, you got family over there. You know,
a pilgrimage over to Vietnam. And we realized that time situation. I looked at my computer this morning. I'm making breakfast, and I go, oh, my God, it's already October 14th. And my wife goes, oh, my God, that's less than 2 months and we're leaving.
I know, isn't that wild?
And we barely have our passports. We barely have visas. Like, we have no luggage. We have
nothing.
Wait,
you have passports, though, right?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Okay. We got those a while ago.
Okay, so you got that taken care of.
We still are figuring out who's going to house sit and watch our dog and our cat because we don't want to pay for a kennel.
That's a lot, too, for three straight weeks. Don't have your brother do it. He's going to throw turds in your garbage can for a month. Nobody wants that.
Well, our problem is we actually know a lot of people who don't have like obligations family-wise. They're okay. Single, they're younger, they work.
And come stay at the house for a couple weeks.
But they're all paying for an apartment. And even if they have the ability to stay at your house, they're basically going to pay for a month at a place they're not staying at. You see the problem there?
Very true. Very true. Can you send the dog to a family member's house for a month?
The problem with that is that all the family close to us are going with us to Vietnam. And then my side of the family, like, is in Lakewood, Washington. So that would mean we land on a Sunday from Vietnam on, like, the 22nd.
Yeah, I got to drive up and go get the dog.
I'm kind of assuming we're doing a show Monday the 23rd until I'm told otherwise.
I mean, I don't know. I might want to take that day off.
Maybe you do. And I'll do a solo show.
Do a best of that day or something.
So I'm curious, Dirt, have you not volunteered to at least take the dog since you have a dog
no,
in the
no,
yard?
Or does Sprague not trust Dirt
with the dog?
No, on everything. No on everything.
Okay.
No on Dirt should not be asked to watch anybody's dog that isn't a direct tied in family members or that benefits him with the wife.
Yeah, this is crossing like friendship boundaries that I don't know if we're ready to cross yet.
Yeah, I don't want to be a jerk.
Guys have been doing shows together for what, 7 years?
Yeah, I mean, he's all right.
This is going to sound really mean.
I didn't mean to take it somewhere else.
No.
Why don't you give it to Swigard?
Well, too soon. Hashtag way too soon. We have the same dog.
Well, no, I'm saying maybe weird? He would enjoy having a dog around the house.
Yeah.
My fiance's family just had to put down their family dog. And I know they're like, hey, we want to watch your dog for a weekend. Just have a dog around and, you know, just kind of reminisce.
Sure. But let me tell both of you something here. Me as a human being, I never want to be asked to watch somebody's pet for 19 days.
That's a long time.
Yeah. So that means never asking anybody else.
Plus,
to watch my dog for 19 days.
It's not me you're asking. You're basically asking the wife because I will be traveling with the Pilots basketball team during that time.
And then Dirt's going to be like, well, I got Ducks, and then I've got Winterhawks. See, I got to go to Blazer game, Sprague. You're gone for 20 days.
I got a lot of things going on, you know.
So, look, and ultimately, I think we have somebody that's going to, it's a family friend. She's like 21 years old. She's volunteering to do it for 17 of the 19. We got a friend helping out.
Sure.
I don't put that on friends. I know that sounds weird considering I'm asking other people, but like my friends, my personal friends,
right.
I don't want to do that for you. So I'm not going to ask you to do it for me.
There's a drastic difference too. In like, hey man, I'm out of town this weekend. Can you help me out?
Big difference.
Hey,
there.
I'm gone for, hey, we're going to go to the beach for a night or something. Can you go make sure the dog didn't dump in the house and ate some dinner and walk him around the block? Like no problem whatsoever. When you're talking 19 days, that dog's living at my house for 19 days.
You're going to end up not wanting to give the dog back. It's my dog now.
That's a long time. That's all month of December, too.
It so bad when it goes back. It just doesn't mind at all. It refuses its kibble because you gave it like bacon the entire week.
Yeah, that's not going to end well. That's a long trip, though. That's a long time to be gone.
It is a long time. I actually feel bad for my dog and my cat. I do feel bad.
That's a tough part about having animals, man. Well, it's hard to get away like that.
I was looking at it from her perspective last night. I took her on a long walk, and I thought, imagine not even being aware of what you are or that your life is going to end someday. These animals have no clue.
Just hanging out.
And then imagine you're so familiar with a different species, and then that said person or thing leaves your life for 19 days. That dog's going to think I ditched her.
Totally.
She's going to think somebody else moved into our house.
Yeah.
And that the wife and I and the kids, we've all moved now, and she is now the dog of this new person.
This is the new normal. I have a new family now. I have to get used to their life and where I'm going to sleep and where I go. That's a whole thing. You always tell, too, my dog, whenever we're gone, like for a week-long trip or whatever, and we've done a couple of them since getting him, there's always like a massive amount of pee when we get back.
Yeah,
like you get so excited and so happy, he just starts peeing all over your feet.
That's dude. So I learned that trick a long time ago. I greet my dog outside. In the garage.
Yeah, don't go inside first.
Come on out here. Right. Come on.
Oh, how we doing?
There's the puddle, and it's not in my house.
Yeah, Sprague's. Somebody said texted in the Sprague's going on a whole McAllister family vacation. I know. I'll stop by your house and make sure the wet bandits didn't stop in and steal your Christmas.
Don't worry, the lights turn on every night at like 7:30.
Bing. There you go. You got your timer all set.
And if we leave my oldest behind, I'm teaching her how to set up the train to make it look like people are partying in my house.
Yeah, she's got it all figured out.
All right. So we got a good show today. We have a lot to get to on a Football Monday edition. My team had a nice bye over the weekend, so the Beavs are all rested up and watched your team take care of business on Friday.
It was a really mixed emotion week for me. I'm not going to lie to you. It started with Oregon getting a nice win on Friday, which was good. It's always nice to have one you don't have to sweat over.
A nice win. You won by 6 touchdowns, buddy.
It's not a nice. Nice little win.
It's more than nice.
That was nice to have on Friday. But then I also had, it was an emotional roller coaster yesterday because, one, Swigard's damn Dallas Cowboys booted me out of my survivor pool. Mm. Thanks for no-showing against a winless New York Jets team. Fire Jason Garrett. They're a joke of an organization, and the Cowboys suck. That's all I have to say about that one.
Can you read that stat you read to me right before the show started?
Sure.
It didn't click in my mind until we started the show.
Joe Fisher, I don't know if he knew that I took them in the survivor pool or not, but he's just trying to twist the knife in my back as the day goes on.
Yeah.
So, sorry, there's a lot of numbers I'm going to throw at you, but just follow along, okay? Since 1991, it's a long time, NFL teams are 90-1, okay? In 91 games, this has happened. They're 90-1.
That's dominance.
When they win the time of possession battle,
okay,
they win the total yardage battle, They win the turnover battle. They pick up 25 first downs as a team, and they convert at least 10 or more third down attempts.
So six categories, and if you listed all six of those going into a weekend and said, Sprague,
they
are these,
this.
How important are these six? I would say, well, they're probably six of the eight most important stats you would have.
Because up until yesterday, an NFL team had never done that and lost a game, and the Dallas Cowboys became the first one since 1991.
So they were 90-0?
90-0. The Cowboys yesterday won time of possession, total yards, turnovers.
Wow.
They picked up 25 first downs, and they converted 10 third down attempts. And they lost the game! What are you doing on the...
You spend a lot of time kind of circumcising the mosquito.
Well, he did circumcise the mosquito today. He said there's more problems than just Jason.
No, I mean, there are, but no. Just shut your mouth,
actually,
Jerry, okay?
I don't think there are. I think this is all... This is Jason Garrett to a team, man.
I saw a stat, too. They ran the ball like 20-something times on first down, and you know what their average yard per carry was on first down? Like 2.2. Hey, way to set yourself up in nothing but second and eights the whole game.
So a media member in Dallas, I saw this, somebody retweeted, a media member in Dallas that runs like an SB Nation site, he was chronicling the plays, the first play call of every drive.
Yeah.
He said he got to the first nine, they ran the same exact play.
Right,
it wasn't
time.
Even just like that they ran the ball, it was same side, same formation, same everything.
Yeah, we had a thing. We were going over to her family's aunt uncle's house for dinner and stuff yesterday, and I was listening.
Uncle Dennis?
Yeah.
Oh.
Ate some burnt ends, man. It was delicious.
Damn it!
Yeah. Joke's on you, buddy.
I hate you, Dennis. Bring me those burnt ends, bud.
So I had it on the radio driving out, and it was at the end of the first half. The game was, I believe, 7-3 still, or 14-3, somewhere in that range, and they elected to go for it on fourth down and ran like an option play. They'd get stuffed, of course, because it's the damn Cowboys. Next play is like an 85-yard touchdown pass, and I'm just wonderful, wonderful. Mm. So I had that happen, and then I also had the counteracting quarterback play of Kirk Cousins is now an MVP, and Marcus Mariota officially got benched. It was a weird weekend.
Yeah.
A weird weekend, man.
I had my first sub-500 week of the NFL season picking against the spread. I had a pretty bad weekend.
Yeah, because everybody saw the Steelers winning and, you know, the Titans not scoring a point against Denver.
God, it's one thing for the Titans to lose the game. It's another to not even show up and play the game.
What the hell, man?
I actually like the Saints. That line got to like 4.
Did it really? Yeah.
I think it got to 4. Like, people were getting way over their skis about the Jags pulling the upset. And I'm like, this is getting too extreme here.
Over the top, right?
Jameis and Mariota the same day, both proving that they're both busts. 1 and 2. Wasn't that wild? Nobody won that battle.
No, that was wild to have the day start with him throwing 3 of the worst interceptions I've ever seen, and then have the day end with Mariota not able to pick up a first down and get benched in Denver.
Let's do this. Let's take all the Mariota, like, insane people on social media.
Sure.
Let's take all the Jameis and Winston obsessed people on social media. All the truthers.
Sure.
Let's lock them in a box, and all they can do is tweet to each other so we don't have to hear about whose fault it is that one or the other sucks.
Just shout it into the void.
Well, Jameis, can you really blame that offensive line and the head coaching change overall? Well, Mariota, he's had 4 OC. I saw both their games. They both sucked yesterday. They were not good.
They were both awful yesterday. And to be like the icing on the cake, too, of losing in the survivor pool with the Cowboys is the pool is based out of Philadelphia. So they're all the people who run it are all diehard Eagles fans.
Ooh, so they took a little more.
They have an award that they hand out every year called the Cow D Award, as in male body part award, the Cow D Award. And whoever is the first person in the pool to pick the Cowboys officially receives that award. And so I took the Cowboys in week 1 at home against the Giants, which is like a no-no because it's an all Eagles pool, basically. So I've been getting it for like 4 straight weeks now, Cow D, Cow D, Cow D. And then the guy who sets up the whole survivor pool emailed me simply yesterday in all caps, "You're Cow D'd out of the pool." All right, see you next year. Thanks,
well,
Cowboys.
We have a great show today on this Monday. Hope you guys had a good weekend, enjoyed the sports that were going on. Baseball was really good last night between the Astros and the Yankees in Game 2. We got Game 3. Washington could basically put that series to bed if they can win today at 4:30. But we'll start with football, as we do every Monday, and we'll start in the Pac-12. Mike Yam's going to join us at 2 o'clock, so that's going to be our daily ticker guest at 2 with the Yammers, and then 1 o'clock is our NFL whip round. But we'll start with the Ducks, who played on Friday night. You heard it here on The Fan. They beat Colorado 45-3. Are we worried about anything else going into Washington week? We'll talk about that. Start there. Dirt and Spray with you on 1080 The Fan.
Boom, boom, boom.
Got the sheet here, and I'll read it real quick. We're giving away Oregon Duck home game tickets all season long. We have an exclusive app contest. In order to enter and win, you have to follow these three easy steps. You download the radio.com app from the App Store. You allow push notifications, and then you favorite 1080 The Fan as your station. Then we'll send you a notification with a link to enter and win. The only way you can enter and play is to download the radio.com app. For more info, go to 1080thefan.com. And we'll start with Oregon because it is Oregon and Washington week. It is Husky Duck Hate Week for the opposing fan bases up in Seattle. 12:30 kick. Perfect time, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's a great time on Saturday.
Up at Montlake. And, you know, we'll start with the Ducks who played Friday night. Look, I know Colorado's not a great football team, so I'll just start there. My follow-up is simply this. I watched that entire game, even to the end. What am I watching this for? But I did. Is there any more, like, are we still going to bitch all week, bitch and moan about the Ducks? Or can we just say, hey, they're really stinking good. Their defense is sensational. It's number one in the country in, like, four categories. Mm-hmm. And they hit their stride offensively. They found a rhythm offensively, and they put points on the board. I mean, largely, Duck fan that was complaining was only complaining about offense, and I'm sure I'm still going to read complaints all week. I don't know, man. On the road, they don't travel. That defense, and those are obvious concerns. But at least for a week, the Ducks really, you have nothing to complain about today.
No, the only thing you got to complain about is the Breland injury. That's tough. We found out today he's done for the year, and that was Herbert's favorite target. So that really was the only negative out of the game. Javon Holland's going to be okay and play on Saturday. Troy Dye's going to be okay and play on Saturday. I was happy watching that game that we finally have the opportunity to break down an Oregon performance and give the defense their due credit, because the last handful of weeks, even after their games, it has been, well, Oregon's defense is great, but Oregon's defense is great, but, and usually the buts are the offense isn't scoring enough points, and that's usually what people want to talk about, is find the negativity out of a game. So that's the leading headline out of their win over Stanford and their win over Cal, not how dominant the defense is. And the other but is, well, Stanford and Cal are limited offensively. And, you know, both of those points are valid, and I understood why folks wanted to have that as a talking point around Oregon, but I think watching that game on Friday night, it was amazing to me to think of the transformation of this defense that has been bookended by Steven Montez starts. Like, I kept going back to that. And if you don't remember, Steven Montez made his first career start at Autzen Stadium 3 years ago. The Ducks dressed up like the mascot. He came into Autzen and he shredded them as a freshman quarterback. And everybody was like, who the hell is this kid? Because what was it? Sefa Lufau was their other quarterback at the time who was good. And everybody thought, well, Oregon could win. They got a backup quarterback at Colorado. They scored nearly 40 points. Oregon couldn't get a stop. And then you fast forward 3 years and you just think about how far the program has come and how much they've changed, especially on that side of the football. And really, you would think the freshman Steven Montez would have gone 19 of 34 for 131 yards and four interceptions. And the senior Steven Montez would have shredded him for 40 points just because he's been around that long.
Yeah,
all the butts around Oregon's defense is gone, and it's finally time to give them credit for how good they are. Colorado is a decent offensive football team. They are better than Cal on that side of the ball. They're better than Stanford on that side of the ball. They had Laviska Shenault playing, who's one of the best wide receivers in the country, and you absolutely dominated them to the point of frustration. You forced turnovers. It was an amazing performance. The offense was a get-right game because Colorado's bad on defense, so they should have gone out and scored 45 points, and it was nice to see that. I just was incredibly impressed and continue to be so, by the way. They're playing defensively, and it's going to give them a chance in every game this year.
Well, you know, I largely thought Oregon would score points. I don't think it was a given, though, going in to a portion of the fan base that they were going to put up 45. You know, if I would have told you that final, would you have been surprised before the game started? If I said, hey,
probably.
Dirt, I think Oregon's going to win 45-3.
See, I wouldn't have been surprised if they scored 45. I would have been surprised if Colorado only scored three.
Because the offensive side of the ball has been their problem if they've had one.
Mm-hmm.
But my thing was, okay, they have the ability, especially against a banged-up MASH unit, kind of like what Colorado was throwing out there Friday night.
Yeah, they had like a backup right guard starting at nose tackle.
I thought they could score points. I just, in my mind, I wasn't fully ready to see it. You know, I was thinking like a 30-17 type ball game. That score doesn't even indicate the difference. It was mainly a 20-point ball game. For them to go out and get 45, that boosts some confidence going into a big rivalry weekend game where you know the opponent's pissed because they lost to you last year on a missed field goal, and then you took advantage of that. You ran the ball down their throats. in the general sense of you ran the ball more than you threw, and even when they knew you were running, they couldn't stop you in certain moments. I thought it was really important for their offense to put up a 45-point spot. Didn't expect it. I had no expectations that they would, but for the offensive unit to go out there and build some confidence for themselves going into this matchup on Saturday when it's going to rain at Husky Stadium.
Yeah, it was big.
I thought that was pretty important for them.
It was really big. They got their running game going. There was a lot of chunk plays. I think I saw the stat in the first quarter against Colorado. They had more plays of 20 yards or further than essentially they did in the entire game against Cal. And we talked to Cristobal last week, and he highlighted it, and I really thought it was important. You need to have explosive plays offensively. When you're trying to execute drives that are going 5-6 yards a pop and are 12-13 plays long, that's just really difficult to do because at some point a mistake's going to happen, a turnover, a bad penalty is going to kick you back, and you're not going to be able to pick up a first down. It makes your life so much easier when you're able to have chunk plays. And you think of Verdell, who broke a bunch of long runs. Travis Dye came in with a long run there late in the game. You had four different wide receivers and a tight end, I guess, counted in that, with catches over 20 yards, right? I mean, you were moving the ball down the field in chunks, and that was really nice to see. The issue that I saw offensively that I think is a concern going into Seattle, there's only one. Well, the Breland injury is tough, but
yeah, that one sucks.
The case of the drops came back a little bit on Friday night. You know, if you didn't watch that game, you can look at Justin Herbert's stat line and say 18 of 32, 261, two touchdowns. Really? Not great against a bad defense. There were easily five or six drops. There were two drops in the end zone. He threw maybe his two best balls of the season was one early on in the game, rolling out, escaping, threw one to Brian Addison along the sideline. Should have picked up a first down. Addison bobbled it, no catch. They didn't end up getting any points out of that drive, I don't believe.
Is that the one we were texting about Addison?
Yes, we were in our group feed, like, God, catch the damn ball. And then he had one to Juwan Johnson, who it was nice to see him play and make a couple of catches, but we knew he had drop issues last year at Penn State. Maybe his best throw of the year was the one he put in the back of the end zone, 40 yards on a frozen rope in between two defenders, hit him in the numbers and right in the hands, and he dropped it. Yeah. And I think Oregon ended up with no points or a field goal on that drive. Those are the kind of things that you can't have happen against an opponent like Washington, because Washington is much better defensively than Colorado. So that was really the only concern I had, was seeing the drops rear their ugly head. But at least to counteract that, you had Micah Pittman with another incredible performance. Not the numbers don't pop off, but every time they throw him the ball, he makes a big play, and I want to see more of him.
You know what? Because I didn't see much of him in their previous one against Cal. I mean, I saw the four catches, but I didn't watch the entire game from start to finish.
Sure, sure.
What I noticed from watching that is he pops on the screen, and he doesn't strike me as a freshman in terms of his demeanor.
No.
Now, that's not, again, to your point, like, it's not like he's lighting up the stat sheet here. And
I think he has seven catches in two games.
Right, which is fine, but it's just the confidence I think he carries with himself of, look, my brother's doing this at USC. My dad did this all the way in the NFL. Like, I can do this. I'm a Pittman. He kind of carries that swagger with him. I can't really explain it outside of that when I watched him, I just said, this kid's going to be good. He's going to be really good for Oregon this year, and I think he's going to carry that the next 2 to 3 years, depending on what his career is. But that was a pretty vital part. I see what you're saying. I wouldn't even say you're nitpicking. I think it's just natural on a rivalry week. That means a lot to you.
Right. You want to play a clean game.
You do want to play a clean game, and you don't want to have to worry about drops. But right now, defensively,
I mean, they're dominant on that side of the ball.
I can't wait to see them travel. I think that's going to be the biggest question for Mario Cristobal this week. It's not necessarily winning the game. I know how important that is, and he knows how important that is. You need to travel. He has got to prove that he can travel, he can take his circus on the road, and that they can perform under any tent. That's largely been his problem. That's basically been the only problem, in my opinion, outside of complaining about offensive schemes. He needs to be able to go on the road this week, and I thought that Colorado game probably did wonders for them, where they're not going to read their own headlines, because they did that last year, and that was a big mistake they've admitted to. Mm-hmm. And now you know you have a, what, two-game lead on the Huskies. If you can win this game this week, barring something massively going wrong, you are comfortably in the driver's seat in the North. You're ahead of Cal.
Yeah,
you're ahead of
UW
by three games. Yeah. You're ahead of Washington State, who's in the tank. You're ahead of Oregon, like, you're ahead of Stanford and Oregon State. You have a real opportunity this weekend. And as great as that defense has been, I've been a buyer into it since day one. I loved that Andy Avalos hire. You're going to have skeptics about you going up to Seattle and traveling. And so I think that was important, was having that get right game offensively.
Sure.
And I thought that was really important that he allowed those guys to not let Colorado get in the end zone. I was thinking in my head, oh, they're going to backdoor cover this 29 spread that we've bought up on a teaser.
Yeah, they'll score on a backups or something.
They took that very personal. And I think the coaching staff largely recognized that and said, yeah, go do your thing.
I think the main reason why I haven't been quite as concerned offensively as some fans the last couple of weeks is the defense. And on the note of traveling, defense travels. You know, I don't have a concern about Oregon going into Washington and playing good defensively. I think there's still questions about what they're going to do offensively on the road. And Washington has a good defense. You got to give them credit for that. So it's not going to be an easy matchup for them. But this defense is going to keep you in every single ball game. Which is a great start. And I thought the most pivotal moment of that game and the most telling sign of where you're at from a depth standpoint now, too, which is incredibly improved from last year, was the drive at the end of the first half. I mean, you had on the same play, your two best defenders go down on the same play. I mean, talk about a double whammy. You lose Javon Holland, who's one of the best safeties in the country, and Troy Dye, who I don't even know if I know Holland didn't play the rest of the game. I don't know if Dye even returned, but
yeah, Dye came back in later.
He came back in later, but you lose him on that drive. And at the moment, the game's 17-3. And if Colorado scores there, it goes to 17-10. They get the ball to start the second half. There's a completely different feel around that game. And with two backups at key positions replacing your two best defenders, you overcome it. You find a way to get a stop. Mario Cristobal, I think, mistakenly accepted the penalty to give him two chances at third and goal.
Yeah, that was in the moment. I'm like, why would you accept that?
Would have been fourth down. What are you doing?
Yeah.
And you end up getting a pick, and then you follow the pick up with an 80-yard drive in a minute and a half, and you go up 24-3 into the half. I mean, that to me told me all I need to know about how good this defense is.
Coaches probably deserve the benefit of the doubt because they get that position, and you and I never will. Do you think that was accepting that penalty on third? I know in the grand scheme, it really didn't mean everything given how that game ended, but do you think in the moment he accepted because he trusted his defense or because maybe he just wasn't?
I think he trusted his defense more from 10 yards out than 1 yard out.
Yeah.
Because I think it would have been fourth and one from the 1 or 2 yard line. So you're thinking they're probably going to go for it. They're not going to kick a field goal there. You turn around, you could just fall forward for a touchdown. He wanted to make him go 10 yards in two plays.
Well, and you mentioned Jacob Breland. For those who are just tuning in, Jacob Breland is out for the season now. I did think the Javon Holland one was going to end up being bad because he had his leg up and he wouldn't
look good.
Yeah, and it sounds like he's day-to-day, so he potentially will be playing this week, and I would expect him to be playing, but we'll ask Mario when we get him on Tuesday, Wednesday, whenever. But the Oregon Ducks, they get a nice win. They beat Colorado convincingly by 45-3 on Friday night. We'll stick in the conference. We like to react to the Pac-12 weekend. Actually, let's go to the team they're going to play because that team was on the road in the desert with a lot of question marks about them. How did they look getting ready for Oregon this weekend in Seattle? We'll get to that next. All right, welcome back in. Dirt and Sprague with you on this Monday afternoon. Mike Yam's going to join us for the ticker at 2 o'clock. So don't worry, we got a daily ticker coming up at 2. Mike Yam, yet again from the Pac-12 Network. You know, people chiming in at the Better You Today text line 55305 on what they made of Oregon. Well, what did we make of Washington? They were coming and limping. People couldn't believe what we had been seeing from the Huskies this year. They just didn't look like a prototypical Chris Peterson team defensively. They weren't as stout as they have been in years past. And offensively, they continued to have problems.
Yeah.
Well, they went to Arizona and they figured themselves out. They won 51-27, I believe, was the final score in the desert. And that was one that I think was about a 6-point spread. Some people wondered if they were even going to get out of there alive. Yes, they did. They win comfortably going away. Jacob Eason had 2 touchdowns. Sean McGrew had 106 on the ground.
Yeah.
Puka Nacua finally made a statement with some big catches in that game. I saw that as well.
Big time recruit.
And here we go, man. Oregon, you have a 2-game lead in the conference right now because of the Huskies' start, but nonetheless, this is still a mightily important game given what Oregon's schedule is.
Oh, it's huge.
After this weekend in Seattle.
It's huge. I do. Before we get to Washington, can we take a moment to highlight Khalil Tate throwing a ball backwards with his left hand that was returned for a touchdown? Can we just mention that for a moment? I don't think I've ever seen that before in a game.
He was unusually bad, in my opinion, that night.
His reaction to getting sacked was to put the ball in his left hand, try and throw it away, but he didn't clearly because he like basically fumbled it, but he threw it and it went backwards.
Yeah.
And it was a backwards pass that was then picked. Like, I've never seen that before in my life. So I just wanted to highlight that for a moment.
I'm okay doing that because I'm kind of the same. I was like, wait,
what are you doing,
what
dude?
What is he doing right now?
He had a couple of plays too where he just ran out of bounds when he was scrambling. Like, you know, you could throw that ball away.
Yeah. How many times did he run to the side? He'd be 6 yards behind the line of scrimmage and he would go straight out of bounds instead of just chucking the ball up. And you could hear the whole crowd, what are you doing?
Just the groans coming down. Those are pretty funny. I also enjoyed the early punt team issues for both teams. It was blocks on each side, guys dropping punts. Like, it was sloppy. But look, this was a pivotal game for Washington. This was a almost season-defining weekend for them. You highlighted the ramifications of Oregon, Washington, and Seattle on Saturday. The Huskies are still alive in the conference, and they're still alive in the Pac-12 because of this game. If they would have gone into the Oregon week already in a three-game hole in the Pac-12 North, it really wouldn't have mattered if they beat Oregon on Saturday, because then not only would you have needed Oregon to lose two more times in order to get the tiebreaker over them, you would also have to win out the remainder of your games, and I don't know how much confidence you would have in Washington if they couldn't beat Arizona last weekend. So this was a pivotal game for them. I thought they got back to their identity, and you look at the way they played defensively. There were a couple of chunk plays in that second quarter where they lost it just slightly, but then they tightened up and only gave up really points in garbage time in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, because they were losing at half.
They were, and I think that was the other thing that would be an encouragement for Husky fans, is they, again, looked anemic on offense in the first half. Arizona's not good defensively, and I think this was kind of viewed in the same light as Oregon, Colorado, where your offense has been struggling. Well, all right, you get a weaker opponent. Arizona's defense is one of the worst in the conference. You got a chance to go put some points up here and look right, and they didn't in the first half. Outside of the punt returns and fumbled punts, block punts, the Khalil Tate fumble touchdown that we talked about, they couldn't get anything going on offense. And then it exploded for 14 in the third quarter, 24 in the fourth quarter. They got back to running the ball efficiently. Eason looked good. He didn't turn it over, which has been an issue a little bit. So he cleaned that stuff up. They ran the football the way that they want to. This was a must-win for Washington, and they looked good, especially in the second half.
So given what you saw, I know this is something we'll probably get back to on Friday once we have all the interviews and we think about things and we read some pieces. Given what you saw, does your feeling change about this coming weekend's matchup? What you saw from Oregon Friday and then what you saw in the second half against the Huskies, or with the Huskies?
Not necessarily, because I trust Oregon's defense more than I trust Washington's right now. I don't know what the over-under is listed on a Monday of this game. I'd be curious to look it up, because I feel like hammering the under.
I'm for sure hitting the under. It's going to rain. It's going to be a little windy. There's no chance I'm taking the over in this one.
There's going to be mistakes. Guys, you know, sloppy stuff because of the weather potentially in Seattle.
I know that Oregon offense does struggle against better defenses.
Right. I think the watching Oregon's defense play the way they did against a decent, Colorado offense was a real big encouragement for me. And watching Washington struggle, especially in that first half, it's just tough for me to see them scoring a lot of points in this game on Saturday.
What would you guess is the over-under number?
If I was in Vegas, I'd set it somewhere around 46, 47.
Ooh, 46. You're very close. 52.
I'm hammering the under. Yeah. Hammering the under on Saturday.
That's going to be a 17-13 game at the most.
Yeah, 21-17 at the most. I don't see it being. I mean, you had perfect conditions last year in that game, and what was the final? 28-24?
27-24?
It was a perfect fall Saturday in Oregon.
It was a beautiful day.
It was like as good a fall football weather as you can get.
It was like hot outside.
Yeah, neither team got to 30 in that one.
Yeah. But Washington's, they still didn't build trust, I don't think, with their fan base, whereas I think Oregon fan feels like they know who their team is. You know, you can sit there and go as a Duck fan, well, yeah, we're slightly inconsistent offensively and our defense is stinking good. I don't know what Washington fans are saying today. I don't know if an Arizona win is leaving a fan to go, oh, yeah, I know who we are. Given what we saw almost late against USC, what we did see against Cal, what you did see down on the farm against Stanford, either Arizona was a get-right game that's going to help them tremendously, or they're going to continue to be this inconsistent mess throughout the year and end the season being somehow 8-4. And we're all going to go, what?
Right.
The Huskies were 8-4 this year?
How did that happen? I think both teams, too, have a real encouraging note on offense, because you look early in the season and they were struggling to find a go-to guy in the passing game. And you look at these last couple of weeks, Puka Nacua playing the way he did on Saturday. I remember following his recruitment because Oregon was in the mix to get him. He ends up committing to Washington. And I remembered that name and was kind of waiting to see him break onto the scene. And finally, I mean, it was only 3 catches for 97 yards. But much like Micah Pittman, it doesn't have to be a 10-catch, 200-yard game. You could just see it. I mean, there's just a different level there, and he brings a different dynamic to that offense. So I think both teams have that strength now, potentially a go-to guy that you trust, and it's just amazing that both of them are true freshmen, and I think they're going to continue to build offenses around them. And the game Saturday will come down to, just in terms of who you're picking, what do you have more confidence in, or I guess lack of confidence? Do you trust Oregon's elite defense more than you trust their ability to travel? Because as you've highlighted, and I think it's still a valid point, they've struggled away from Autzen the last year. And, you know, going down to Stanford and getting a win was nice, but there's like 42 people in the crowd, and that's a 50-50, you know, attendance because of how many Oregon fans. That's not going to be the case on Saturday. You're playing in a hostile environment for the first time since the opening week of the season, which was, what, almost 2 months ago at this point. So you got to prove that you can travel and do it in a hostile environment.
Somebody just retweeted the softy video from the kick.
Yeah.
Come on, Peyton. Come on, Peyton.
It's gonna be it.
Let's go, Peyton.
It's gonna be good.
Hot dogs are gonna win the game. Let's go, Peyton.
I mean, I can't wait for it because it's not only a rivalry, but what's on the line? Like, if Oregon wins this game on Saturday, it would take an epic collapse for them to not win the Pac-12 North. And if Washington wins, they're right there in the race. They only have 2 conference losses. They would hand Oregon their first conference loss, so they're only a game back.
Oregon still has Wazoo. They have to go on the road to USC.
ASU doesn't look like a gimme. Nope. You got to go down to ASU late in the season. Yeah. So, I mean, there's not gimmies left on their schedule necessarily. So a win for Washington immediately changes the landscape of their season.
I think this is actually bigger than crystal ball. I don't know how I'm saying that given where Washington currently is and where Oregon is. But why I say that is you are trying to build on a foundation of trust with your fan base of what you can become versus Peterson showing you what you can become. You've been to a playoff.
Yeah, you've won the conference.
You've won the conference multiple times. You've been to a Rose Bowl. You haven't succeeded in those games, and that's a different conversation. But right now, Oregon's building off a defense, recruiting. They're complaining about – I just think there is a big statement that can be made by Cristobal and his staff. If they can go to Seattle and they can win that game, you just mentioned it, even with that slate that they have of Washington State, who has 4 years in a row now, at USC, who played with Notre Dame pretty tough, and Arizona State, who is no slouch clearly – that would leave you enough room to stub your toe once or twice and still be comfortably into, or not comfortably, but into a Pac-12 championship scenario.
Yeah, if you win on Saturday.
And if you get to that point, nothing else matters. It's only the one game. And then obviously if you win that one,
you
it's
got a chance,
presumably going to be for a Rose Bowl. So I do think somehow there's more pressure on Oregon's coach because of the newest, he's a new hire, newer-ish hire. You still have those road woes. Peterson and company, I just expect them to play better at home, and they're coming off a good win against Arizona. Not a great win, but a good win against Arizona in the desert, and now you're coming to a comfortable spot where Oregon, under Cristobal, hasn't shown that they're completely comfortable quite yet. Yeah. So Washington wins their game against Arizona, 51-27. The Ducks get a big win. We have to talk about the Beavers.
You ready?
Do we?
I mean, we do.
We don't.
We don't.
Would people be mad?
You can't play this game again.
Would people be mad?
Leading segments when you win, and then we don't even mention them when they lose. We're not doing that again this year.
Is there really anything to talk about?
I mean, can you really blame me for leading a segment when they win? On the road?
No, I'm just saying. You guys wanted to play that
game
last year.
The only thing I know for sure after that game is UCLA is god-awful.
Yes, that was the lesson
That's
of the weekend.
That's what that proved.
That was the lesson of the weekend.
All right, well, maybe we'll mix Oregon State in with the Pac-12, the rest of the slate that was. Beaver fan can chime in. I have a confession to make. I'll do that next on The Fan. You know, it's always kind of a weird thing when your favorite team plays on a bye week. But unfortunately, Oregon State did. They were supposed to be on a bye. They weren't even supposed to play last weekend.
They were supposed to have the week off.
Yeah, Jonathan Smith, they didn't practice. They were just told Saturday morning, hey, wake up. You got a football game. Utah came into Corvallis and just thumped the Beavers 52-7. It was a garbage-ass touchdown at the end, too, from Jake Luton.
Jebbia, actually.
Okay. This was what I was going to get into full disclosure mode.
Yeah, you turned it off.
Saturday, my brother had, he's unexpectedly having a child.
Yeah.
With his girlfriend. They're in love. They're together.
They're in love.
But they were never going to be a family couple. They're having a kid. And so we wanted to have a big joint baby shower party celebration for him. So I drove up. I knew 100% I knew Utah was winning this game comfortably. Wanted to see a little more fight. I didn't watch a second of this football game. I have no problem admitting this to you. And I'm glad I did. I'm glad I missed every second and didn't have to watch on the DVR. What would I have had to watch?
You didn't miss much. You missed a Zach Moss 91-yard touchdown run early.
I saw five carries for 100 yards and listened to everybody tell me how Zach Moss dominated him all day. And I thought, all day, huh? With his five carries?
He had five carries for 121 yards. Yeah. And two of them went for touchdowns, one of them 91 yards. To be short, you didn't miss anything.
Their defense sucked. Their offense was terrible. I didn't miss anything.
I think the concern out of that game, I mean, you never overreact when you're in a rebuild. And it's an important reminder that there are zigs and zags in a rebuild. It's not a straight linear line that you go on. And for as big of a zig as last week's win over UCLA was, this week was a pretty major zag back in the other direction. The only thing that I was disappointed in was the offense. I mean, I wasn't surprised that Utah came in and ran all over them. They're bigger than Oregon State. They're stronger than Oregon State. Zach Moss is an elite running back, one of the best in the conference. Their game plan was to come in and hand the ball off. They only threw the ball 17 times, and they put 52 points on the board. That tells you what their MO was. So it wasn't surprising to me to watch them run all over them. But when you look early in that game, especially – I mean, you had an opportunity to help your defense out a little bit knowing that they were getting gouged left and right. You came out to start the game to get the ball first. You went three plays, lost 4 yards, punted it back to Utah. They scored a touchdown in six plays. You then went five plays, picked up 15 total yards, punted it right back. Then you had the 91-yard touchdown run. Then you went five plays, 28 yards. So again, only getting one first down. You punted it right back. They scored a touchdown, 21-0. You missed a field goal. You finally forced a punt at 21-0. And you're thinking, all right, here we go. We finally got a punt. And you throw a pick six, and it was 28-0 just like that. Then after the pick six, you attempt to go for it on fourth down in your own territory. You, of course, don't get it. Utah scores a touchdown in three plays. And just like that, it's 35-0. Oregon State, and we've talked about this the last couple of weeks, and I still tend to believe it. They're a good offensive football team. Jake Luton's had a good season. Like, we had the conversation last week, is he better than Justin Herbert because of the way his numbers looked? And Pro Football Focus had ranked him higher based on the way he played. Isaiah Hodgins is a good wide receiver. You have good running backs. Like, we know Jonathan Smith is a good offensive mind. That was the disappointing part to me. You finally had a chance as an offense to go up against an elite-level defense and show, you know what, we can move the ball around a little bit. We're not going to stop them because they're just going to run it down our throat the entire game. But let's go put 21 points on the board and help our defense out a little bit. And as you mentioned, they couldn't find the end zone until extreme garbage time.
Well, I'm not going to say I'm disappointed because I'm not stunned. And I only get disappointed when I'm a little surprised.
52-0 didn't stun you?
No. Like
that's
no, dude, okay. we're not close. And look, last week was a great week, I think, for the general fan base to just enjoy what they haven't seen much, and that's to go on the road and win, in convincing fashion.
Right, start to finish.
But as you mentioned several times on Instagram and on the show, and I think it's 100% spot on, I think it really just showed you how bad and pathetic UCLA is. The combined record of the two teams they've beaten this year are 3-9. The teams they are losing to are 16-8. They're not beating good teams. They're not. And is there another one on the schedule? I believe there is. I still believe that there is a team they can get remaining on their schedule. It's not a given, though. Utah is the top of the conference. They're right there with Oregon, and probably that's it right now. I'm not shocked. In fact, if you tell me this happens in the Civil War this year in Eugene.
Well, because their ability to run the ball and the way they can play defense. It's a bad combination for
Oregon
State.
Those are not good things. Like, Oregon State, this is why I think UCLA surprised me so much. Oregon State is terrible against the run. They're just not good. And Utah said, yeah, they're bad against the run. We're going to run the ball. UCLA couldn't do that. UCLA was like, you know what? We don't know what we're going to do. We'll figure this out. And they lost by 17. UCLA is at a special level of bad, whereas Oregon State got a good win for themselves. It didn't mean the program had taken a step. I'm still going to expect to see a couple of these this year. I think you have Washington coming to town at some point, Oregon in the Civil War in Eugene, hell, ASU. I thought that could be a potential win for them. Maybe ASU is to be taken seriously and they have something to say in the South. They're coming to town. You're still about 2 years away, I think, from us starting a show and going, I'm disappointed in the performance against Utah.
Sure. I mean, I get that. You should. I mean, there should never be a panic mode because you have to remind yourself that you're in a rebuild.
Yes.
I just think anytime you're down 52-0 and you can't get the offense going,
it's a bad look.
It's a bad look. And you mentioned the rush defense. I mean, they're giving up over 200 yards per game on the ground now, and the Utah game had a lot to do with that. And they're now worse in the conference. By the way, USC's 11th in rush defense. That surprised me in the conference at this point.
But is Oregon State still dead last?
They're dead last. Yeah, 205 now after that game. USC is giving up 197. So they're the only team in the conference that's given up over 200 yards on the ground. But again, those numbers can get skewed because you just gave up 256 against Utah. So you weren't before this past weekend, I think, necessarily the worst rush defense in the conference. And then you have a game like that. The only frustration again that I had, I wanted to see him move the ball around a little bit. I'm not surprised that they got blown out. I took Utah to cover the spread, and I thought Vegas was way off on only having that, 13.5 or 14.5, whatever it ended up being. Utah was coming off a nice win over Washington State, in which they dominated, and they had a bye week, so they were fresh. Oregon State, there's always a bit of that hangover. They haven't experienced a win like that in quite some time, from start to finish, and just the emotional high, everybody patting you on the back and telling you how good you are, and kind of an anticipation around the game for the first time. It's hard to come back week in and week out, and programs have to learn that the hard way. Look at Oregon, even for an example, last year. I mean, they beat Washington, and everybody's, you know, they're the toast of the Pac-12, and here we go. They went up to Washington State. They were down 27-0 at the half the next week. So it's hard to do it emotionally week in and week out. When you have an offense that at last week, I heard from Beaver fans saying this is one of the best offenses in the conference, to not score, that was the only thing that I was disappointed in. You're not supposed to be disappointed in the fact that they lost to Utah. Utah is a good football team. I think we got way over our skis on killing them for losing on a Friday night at USC.
It's still a bad loss.
They shot themselves in the foot in that game. 16 penalties. They turned it over inside the 5-yard line. That was one of those games that they had, I mean, in my opinion, no business losing. Bad secondary play where they let Micah Pittman and those receivers run all over them. Utah, just the way I've watched them this year, they should be undefeated. That's a game they should have won. So that's a damn good football team, and they're probably a top 10 team in the country. You just wanted to see a little bit more offensively from them.
I also wondered, too, going into that one, how much were the players going to read about themselves?
It's tough not to as a college kid, man.
You know, and I think that's why there's so many other reasons. Bad at gambling on college football is
sure.
Those are the kind of little things that 18, 19, 21-year-olds do far more often than they want to talk about. You won a game at UCLA by 17. You had a large contingent show up because nobody cares about UCLA football. So if you're a Beaver fan, they're cheap, easy tickets. You felt good. They haven't had a moment like that in a while. Really think about it. What was their last moment?
And the comeback win over Colorado, but that was a different style of win.
That also, a very different style of win. Nobody went to Colorado and go, oh, we're going to get a win.
Yeah.
They were at the bottom of the bottom. And for them to do that, I still, you'd run it 100 times. They're never doing that again.
Well, especially coming off the week before in which you almost beat Stanford. You were close to having back-to-back conference wins.
But what was the last true game a Beaver football team went on a field? And from the start to the finish, they were clearly the best team.
2016 Civil War.
It's 2019. Yeah. It's been a long time. And so for players, coaches, fans, I think it was easy to watch them look the way they did and kind of eat it up because they don't get a lot of those moments.
Yeah.
And then you go into Utah and you think, well, 14.5, what's Vegas saying? I think Vegas gave you a little respect, maybe a little too much, and Utah showed you their Utah and your U.
I mean, yeah, it was a kick in the reality nuts. There's no doubt. I think you look at when they play the upper echelon teams moving forward, and right now you would probably put Washington, Arizona State, and Oregon in that category.
Those are their toughest
left
three
on their
games,
schedule.
Cal this weekend ain't gonna be a cupcake.
No, because we know Cal can play some good defense, and they can run the ball on you as well. I want to see more though. I don't think you just kind of say, oh well, you got blown out. That's fine. You shouldn't be down 52-0 to Washington. It shouldn't be 52-0 to Oregon. You got to put up a little bit more fight than that. And I'm curious to see how they can bounce back this weekend, because I think what you're saying is valid. Mario Cristobal even had the thing, I remember at Pac-12 Media Day, where he said he thought social media helped derail their season last year because of all the chatter after they beat Washington.
You want to retweet everybody
and it went
in
their head, right? And it just kind of, they got full of themselves and thought, man, we are good. We just beat the Huskies. We can beat anybody. And then they got their ass kicked and embarrassed a couple of times down the stretch. And so you have to eventually snap back to reality. And I'm hoping this weekend they do. Cal is not a good offensive football team. We know that. But they're good defensively. This is a game that should not be 49-0 the way that it was last year. I'm still watching Oregon State this season in terms of signs of progress. And so far it has been overwhelming positive. And I think they're a much improved football team from where they were last year. Now go have a better performance Saturday at Cal.
Somebody says, what was the show like when the Beavs were competent?
What was the show like when the bees were competent?
We haven't had one, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, we were doing it. I mean, there were people were pretty high when they were 4-8. People thought, you thought at the time the program was going to take off.
4-8.
I know, but that was, I know, that sounds laughable. But we thought they were heading in the right direction. And then Gary Anderson did his Gary Anderson things, and here we are.
All right, loaded second hour. NFL Whip Round is next on The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.